Is injury wrought by oneself?
No, grasshopper.
Then by another?
No.
Then by oneself and another?
Did your eye meet your own fist?
Then shall I seek ways to repay?
What is the debt?
My suffering.
Vengeance is a water vessel with a hole. It carries nothing but the promise of emptiness.
Shall I then repay injury always with kindness?
Repay injury with justice and forgiveness. But kindness always with kindness.
Cause you choose it. Most DJs won't refuse. Hello?
Oh my God. Check 1, 2. Fat Mac. Man, we got an emergency show. My boy called me up. He said he got something to say. Nigga Fuchsia's in the house, man. Good Lord. What is going on with you, man? What you got to say is so important that you waking me up this morning, man. What's popping?
I was watching the Freddie Gray thing.
Right.
In Baltimore, and I listened to podcast from last night, and you don't really have to put this one up in a hurry. You can take your time with it, but I just had to get this shit off my chest.
Okay, go ahead.
Normally, I'm not a person that really gets into this internet shit, but there are some things when I have a certain inspiration, I have to say them.
Okay.
And, you know, I went to sleep watching that shit, and I woke up watching it, and my opinions of it sort of, you know, changed because, yeah, they rioted, and of course they tore up their own shit. Now, after this morning cleaning it up, they're smart enough to go out there and clean that shit up.
Right.
But they did confront the police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did do that.
They did confront the police, and that boy dying the way he did, that's some bullshit.
Right.
And they still haven't come up with an explanation. They can't explain why. Even after riot, they can't explain why.
Right.
So, you know, as far as them confronting the police, I give them kudos on that. But what I thought was interesting, now they're using terms like military presence.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're using terms. They started to say martial law, but they said the mayor doesn't want to use martial law. She wants to use the term curfew.
Right.
And I thought about you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everybody knows by now that the National Guard is coming.
Yep.
But then I looked at something. You know, I saw who the mayor was.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You text me about the mayor.
Yeah. I like her.
And then I saw the police chief, and he's black.
Mm, right.
And I went back and I started thinking, and I said, well, it was something you said last night in the prelude to the podcast we actually did.
Right.
And I want to clear that up and kind of discuss this situation, and I don't plan on taking too long.
Okay.
I don't want to give the misperception that we're a bunch of erudite niggas that don't do anything but sit up and read books with no real life understanding.
Right.
So today, briefly, I just want to do a little black community This Is Your Life segment.
Hey, check it out. I mean, you don't have to be brief, man. Shit, we up and we rolling, so take your time, man.
Okay. My coming of age story is no different than anyone else's, and I'll give you a slice of it.
Right.
Pritchard, Alabama is my home.
Right.
Pritchard, Alabama is a community outside of Mobile. Mobile is the city, and Pritchard is a black community on the outskirts. This is a Lion Prime Beat production. And like Baltimore, got a black mayor, or had a black mayor. Sometimes the white ones would come in, a black mayor. And a black man was in charge of the police force, just like Baltimore.
Okay.
And, but for some reason, I mean, you can stop me when this sounds familiar, but it's a carbon copy of exactly what's going on there.
Okay.
Pritchard was a place of working class and working poor people. Working class and working poor. Which, from a political and social standpoint, is not really that much of a difference in the black community. And we always had to go, if we were going to the mall, when you say the mall, you know that ain't nowhere in my neighborhood.
Right.
You know if you're going to the mall, the mall is located where white people live.
Mm-hmm.
So if we went to the mall, we had to go outside the community. That's my point.
Mm-hmm.
any place that was worthwhile was always outside the black community. Mm. Now, I'd be willing to bet you that's 100% of the black people that's listening to this podcast. Anytime you have to go anywhere worthwhile, you always have to go outside your community. Mm. Well, what's in your community? What's in your community is a conglomerate of drug stores, community centers, rec centers, gas stations run by other people. Mm-hmm. Convenience stores where shit is high as hell run by other people. This is your life.
Right.
This is my life. If you were going to the corner store was not ran by a black person. When I was coming up, they used to call them, you know, it wasn't the Arabs when I was coming of age. When I was coming of age, it was the Asians. Okay. Much as it is now with the wig shops, but the Asians had a presence, and some of our misunderstanding or misunderstood elders used to call them Yangs. You remember that term?
Yeah.
But them Yangs were selling us all kind of shit, as my elders would say. Them Yangs. And them Yangs came from places like Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, you know, places where the economy was really bad, but they were making a mint in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And whenever something happened, or whenever something went wrong, the Yangs was the first people that we had a problem. And I didn't understand why, because the Yangs, the so-called Yangs, was never the problem. And that's a slur, and I hate using that term, but I'm just using the term that they used back then.
Yeah.
But this is what the community looked like. This is what the black community was. This is your life. I'm 43 years of age. 43 years later, it's the same shit. Mm-hmm. The stuff in our community tended to be, we didn't have any kind of strong economic base, so our services tended to be substandard. We didn't want to go see white people because they were white. We didn't want to go shop with white people because of the color of their skin. See, a lot of people got that fucked up. These pro-black niggas got that fucked up. We didn't want to go shop with white people necessarily because they were white. We went and shopped with white people because they had the goods that we wanted that the community stores didn't have.
Right.
Or that the stores in our community was charging 10 times the amount for. So it wasn't because we was loving whitey that we wanted to go shop with white people.
Yes.
See, that's a misnomer. We couldn't keep a black-owned store because, you know, we wanted all kind of favors. But if the Yangs, as we call them, charged us the same amount we paid. But it was always more shit, and there was always more variety outside the neighborhood. Kind of like Baltimore.
Right.
Matter of fact, exactly like Baltimore. As I got older, I didn't get into a lot of shit like most people. I had, and during that time of age, you hear people always talking about, well, you know, that was the time when we were a community and so forth and so on, but we really were. Mm-hmm. That would be the difference between then and now. I was blessed in that I had elders that kept me busy and that kept me out of trouble. I would volunteer, you know, working for counseling. And I always couldn't understand why, if they lived in the black community, why were they always answering the white folks like they were? Why were they always, you know, walking on eggshells around white people? I couldn't understand that. Was it because they were coons? Well, you make an argument that, but the real truth was, you know, these white people control their election coffers.
Okay.
The white people were the ones putting the money in their campaigns. The white people were the ones fronting the money for different projects that they wanted to bring. But the projects that they wanted to bring never created never created any employment in the neighborhood. If you were working, you were working. If you weren't, you weren't. And there was no General Motors down south. There was one place down south called International Paper Company. It was one factory, and my father worked in that factory.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like General Motors was to Baltimore.
Right.
You see where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm.
If you worked at that place, you made some money to support a family home. If you didn't, well, you worked at some job at some store in the neighborhood which didn't pay a livable wage. Sort of like in Baltimore. There was high unemployment. Sort of like in Baltimore. So, we had no strong economic base. We had black politicians, but all the black politicians were controlled by the folks that lived in Mobile, Greater Mobile,
mm-hmm.
the white folks. White folks. When they first started talking about back in the early 80s making Martin Luther King's birthday a holiday, and we wanted to march for that. Yes, I did march in my younger years, in my teen years, and some of my early adulthood, I did march and participate. But this particular march was interesting because it was made up of churches and it wasn't even 100 people, but we had signs. And we were just going to march downtown. We were just going to march downtown. But something happened. Somewhere in the rear of the march, some trouble started and somebody started shooting, and we couldn't understand how that happened because everybody in the churches knew that nobody, it was a march. Who's going to bring a weapon to a march for a birthday for Martin Luther King? Who would do such a thing? Who would do that?
Mm-hmm.
Who would disrespect like that? Everybody knew not to do that. Well, soon we found out when this ruckus started and the shots were fired, the whole thing degenerated into a riot. It was some glass broken, some buildings vandalized, and a couple of buildings were set on fire. And the police department charged the people that were in charge of the march with that crime.
Mm-hmm.
It was something like 15 defendants in that march. That were charged as co-defendants. find out, the people that started that wasn't even part of that march. The people that started that were what they call today, I think they call them agent provocateurs.
Exactly. Oldest trick in the book, man.
It's what y'all call today, or what the term that you use today. It was a false flag operation.
Mm-hmm.
And we wondered why our council people wouldn't defend us. No black lawyer would take the case. A white lawyer took that case. And everybody got off, and that's how we found out that they were agent provocateurs from the police department sent in there to create that disturbance. But that was strange. I couldn't understand, because when the march started, we had the police's full cooperation. They showed up, they blocked off streets. They put, you know, that little horse thing they had, the little wood horse thing they have to block off the streets?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We couldn't understand why they would do that when they had went to such lengths to cooperate with us and make sure that we were safe. They were playing us. The Republican administration, if you believe in such things, did not want the publicity of a King March at that time. So what they did was they used the police and the agent provocateurs and some dumb niggas in the neighborhood to do that false flag operation to destroy the planning and the campaign for the King holiday in that community. Then they tried to charge after the fact, even though those 15 people were exonerated in court, they tried to charge the marchers restitutions in a civil case to clean up the shit that they didn't tear up. They actually tried to do this. They lost that case, too. The next year, in the city, everybody noticed a peculiar spike in their property taxes.
Not a peculiar spike. Okay.
And they didn't know why. Their homes, that there was no appreciation in value. The homes were still the same. As a matter of fact, they were depreciating. Realty companies like Century 21 and Remax, they didn't hold those properties in very, there wasn't a very high market value for those properties in Pritchett. So why are the taxes going up?
Okay.
They were trying to get their money back. They were trying to introduce a tax bill, and they succeeded in doing it. A tax bill was introduced by one of the council persons, one of the people that we elected. This is an exercise in democracy. One of the people that we elected exercised the tax hike. Well, one of the people we elected initiated, proposed it, and did some backroom dealing and made sure that that tax hike got through. And he couldn't have done that backroom politics without the cooperation of the other city commissioners or city council people. So all of these people agreed to a tax hike for some stores in a community owned by other people because of a false flag operation run by politicians outside of the community that did not want to see a campaign for the King movement in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a hell of a long way from somebody killing a young boy and not explaining what happened to him.
Right.
It's a hell of a stretch. The scenarios, the facts are different, but the methodology is the same. So my point is that a lot of these things that we say, that you hear us say, this is shit we've lived.
Mm-hmm.
This is not shit that we came across this shit just by reading, but this shit is life experience. I know Pablo, Pablo.
They don't get it, man.
It's not something that we're trying to use to put down people that necessarily don't read. The only thing we say is, why y'all keep falling for the same shit over and over again? That's the question we ask.
Right.
Why are you falling for the same shit over and over again? You see what the game plan is. The shit ain't changed in 50 years. How they able to run the same game plan on you for 50 damn years? You don't need somebody quoting out of a book to tell you that. Them people in Baltimore don't need that. Those people in Baltimore, you know what they're doing? They're out there trying to clean that shit up.
What do you mean by that? What you mean they're out there?
They out there trying to clean that shit up. They out there with shovels, brooms, dustpans. They out there cleaning that shit up. You know, they torched the CVS.
Oh, okay. I got you.
And Habib's check cashing, they went to Habib.
Poor Habib.
Yeah.
Shit.
They robbed the check cashing place. They set a CVS on fire. They set a recreation center. A community center. Set it on fire. There was pictures of them putting shit in trunks. You see niggas going in there putting shit in trunks. Or they cars, TVs, all kind of shit. Now this morning, now that the National Guard is there.
Now they on their best behavior?
Yeah.
Oh, nah.
Best behavior, yeah.
Oh, man, shit. Hey, check this out.
Go ahead.
Check it out. I've covered this in my last show, but the sickening aspect of it is, you know, just how you're saying how y'all fall, how niggas fall for the same shit over and over again. You know, for the past 3-4 years, man, it's just nonstop, back to back. Police brutality, police brutality, police brutality. I mean, anytime, you know, they got something that has a black person and a white officer, they post it. They dangle it in your face. They put it in all sorts of media outlets. And they just keep hammering it, hammering it, hammering it. And I'm like, okay, when are these niggas going to realize that this is obviously by design? Because this shit wasn't popping, you know, like 5 years ago. You know, you hardly ever seen anything like super racial. Then all of a sudden, they just start hammering it. And they just won't stop. They won't let up. It's like, okay, are y'all going to actually look at this, you know, and actually analyze and say, okay, this has got to be by design. It has to be. I mean, what's the odds of these motherfuckers always, you know, picking the story that's going to piss you niggas off? You know what I mean? That's what's irritating me. You know, we got these so-called pro-black niggas talking about the media this and the media that. But when it comes to actually looking at this thing and understanding that they're actually, that these pro-black niggas are actually on the receiving end of looking stupid, they don't want to admit it. They want to keep hammering, and me and you are not saying that these situations that's actually being reported are not unjust. We're just saying, well, you're obviously getting your buttons pushed, so you might want to dial back your emotional response.
Well, the media, they're experts at that.
Exactly.
The media is experts at that. But see, when you have a situation where, like, maybe six companies own most of the channels,
mm-hmm.
that's what you're going to get.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You can't ignore children dying.
Right.
You can't ignore that.
Right.
And the media aspect is one component of it, and you're certainly right when you talk about how they play it up. I'm talking about who play. Where did the idea come from to set this whole thing in motion? Because, see, when the media got it, the person is usually already dead.
Exactly. Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the planners of the operation?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I don't like about the media. Now, mm-hmm. them sensationalizing the murder, they can get away and say, well, we have to report this, but it's the news. But why don't you report everything?
Right.
See what I'm saying?
Right.
And one other thing that I wanted to introduce, that I wanted to explain, is that you always talk about, you know, martial law,
mm-hmm.
police.
Right.
What people don't understand is that the police department has become a law unto themselves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what people are not understanding. The police department has become, so you can have a black mayor, like the lady in Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
but that woman ain't got no control over the police, because the police have something called, the police have a police union,
mm-hmm.
and they are a very powerful lobbying group. That's why the police don't get charged.
Right.
People think they think that it's just because of these grand juries, and that's true from one aspect. The grand juries play a very important part in these guys not getting charged, but the police have a very powerful union, and that union don't answer to, or is not going to answer to, a black mayor.
Mm.
Hell, they don't even answer to the president.
Right.
So that should show people the office of the president is an illusory office.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lesson you should have learned from the Skip Gates thing. And all he said was the police officer acted stupidly. And did you see how they rolled? The police, fourth grade social studies.
Mm.
The police belong to the executive branch of government.
Okay.
Right? They enforce the law, right?
Right.
The president of the United States belongs to the executive branch of government. He enforces the law, right?
Right.
How can the Praetorian Guard dictate to the emperor?
Indeed, how?
See what I'm saying? He just made a statement that he behaves, that white man behaved stupidly by arresting that man in his house. And the police went crazy, both black and white. They rolled on their chief. How you ride on your chief executive? How is that possible? How can you attack the man who gives you your orders? Now, understand that there's a separation of federal and state powers, but the Constitution says the federal is supreme.
Okay.
According to the Constitution, yes, the states have their power, but the ultimate power lies with the federal government. That's the tier system formed under a so-called representative democracy. But yet they were able to bring their chief executive to his knees just because of a statement he made. And this woman in Baltimore, she don't control them police. That's why she can't get no explanation. They move when they get ready to move. The behind-the-scenes forces, the ones that the people are not aware of, these very powerful interests. They dictate what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But the black woman just in front of the camera, the black police chief is just in front of the camera. Just like in my hometown of Pritchett, Alabama.
Mm-mm-mm.
Other people are deciding things that you're not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Behind the scenes, man. Shit.
And I'm not going to refer. I chose to do this to say that it's not necessary. It is good to read.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Back in the day, the most revolutionary act you could do as a slave was to read a book.
Yeah, that was some radical shit.
Now we can read. Niggas would rather die than read.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to go there. This is just real life. This is just real life. If you doubt me, go to your city council meeting and you will get an education that you would not believe. Take 1 second. I'm not telling nobody to read a book. Take 1 second and go to your city council meeting and see the type of shit that they're putting on the ballot. See how they're spending your money. I'm hearing all these pro-black niggas talking about don't call the police. Okay. Don't call the police. Who's going to control all this fuckery we got going on? You see, if you're going to tell black folks to not call the police, if you're going to tell black folks don't engage the police, then by definition, you have to become the police. Because just because you don't call the police, that don't mean that these other niggas going to stop what they doing.
Right.
So if you're going to tell black folks don't call the police, you better damn well put a system in place to protect these elderly people. You better damn well put a system in place that's going to enforce some kind of law and order in the black community. But they ain't made that step. They just want to say stop calling the police. You can lock the police out of your neighborhood. We have the power to... I mean, let's get real black here since we want to be black. Let's get black.
Blackity black. Okay.
Let's get dead Mike black.
Uh-oh, I'm scared now, nigga.
If you want to lock the police out of your neighborhood, you police your neighborhood.
Hmm.
But that means you're going to have to confront your nigga that you know selling dope.
Wow.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
What do you do now?
Mm-hmm.
You let him do his shit?
Shit.
You let him string out somebody's 14-year-old little brother or little sister on drugs?
Right.
Really?
What you gonna do? Keep it real?
When they conducting these fights in the middle of the street, when they hitting each other with tire irons and all this fuckery that go on in Northland,
mm-hmm.
somebody need to step in there and break that shit up. You gonna do that?
Shit.
You gonna put the phone down long enough and stop hollering world star? Long enough to separate them motherfuckers from fighting? Are you gonna do that?
No, they're not. And in the event they do it and shit, then they get out of hand and they actually pop one of them niggas. You know, so, well, I forgot, you know, black lives don't matter when another nigga pop another nigga, so, or a black cop might kill one of them
black
folks.
Yeah. I'm black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm big, we black.
Right. Mm-hmm. Only count when it's white. Shit.
No, you gonna do that now?
Shit.
Are you going to keep order in the black community?
And when, you know what? That's it. Go ahead.
That's the best way to stop the police from coming in.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? Check this out, man. Once again, relying on real life experience, You know, I hear a lot of people say, you know, we need to police our own communities and we need to have more black officers in the neighborhood. But on a real, I don't think that'll work. I really don't think, just how me and you talk about when you have a business and you have a black manager over, let's say, like I said, you in a fast food joint and you have black people working under the black manager. They don't respect the black manager and they tend to do whatever the fuck they want. And then the
basically, well, look at your prison experience.
Mm-hmm.
Nigga, you can't sell dope in here. This is prison. Fuck you, Uncle Tom.
That's
you should have been calling you Sambo, but
yeah, yeah.
Like Uncle Tom and Coon and Sellout.
Right. But that's the same shit that, you know, a black, predominant black police force would face. In a, you
that's
know,
my
a black,
point,
yeah, right.
That's my point. Right. See, when you have to enforce the law on them, then it's on another level.
Right.
Look, you can't sell that shit here. Fuck you, nigga. Police ass nigga. Look, you can't leave these goddamn kids in this house for 2 or 3 days at a time. Mm. It's my house. You mind your motherfucking business, nigga.
They ain't gonna say that shit to no white cop.
They ain't gonna say that to the white man. They always get mad when somebody say they gonna call. But hell, nigga, the white man is the only one you listen to.
Right.
He's the only one you. He's the only one that will make you do halfway right. That's why when I heard that interview. They don't know any better.
Oh, Lord. Don't get me started on that shit. Ooh, talking about the Scarface.
There's a difference between not knowing any better and not giving a fuck.
Right.
Because you benefiting from it.
Yeah.
Don't come with that they don't know any better. They don't give a fuck.
Just to let everybody know. Well, I gotta back up.
Doesn't know any better, and they're honestly, sincerely confused. That's one thing. But when someone is benefiting, when someone is benefiting from a situation, that's the classic paradox in capitalist society: the concept of self-interest and morality.
Let the people know what you're talking about, man, because they don't know what you're talking about, man. As far as you talk,
I heard the interview.
Okay.
I heard it was an interview with Tommy Sotomayor, and he was talking to Scarface.
Okay,
and
there
Face
we go.
Is one of my Face is one of the best MCs. He's one of my one. I'm a Face fan.
Right, exactly.
But some things that he was saying when Tommy Sotomayor was pretty much talking about accountability, all Face was saying, "Oh, they don't know any better. Black women don't know any better. They don't know any better.
Right.
They don't know any better." That's all he kept saying was, "They don't know any better." And then he started this other shit about the boogeyman and all of that.
Face was hot.
He was talking about, well, educating them. People have to want to be educated.
Yeah.
You see, just like when you, I used to hear some of these rappers say, you know, I heard there was a fight once between a little discussion when Snoop Dogg was coming out. There was a little controversy about, you know, his material, and, you know, Calvin Butts, who had taken over Albert Senior Baptist Church, they were on this kick about gangster rap, and then Snoop was like, "I ain't never had nobody to tell me no different." Well, that was a lie, Snoop. And Calvin Butts said, "I'm sure he had somebody to reach out to him and tell him what the deal was. It's just what he chose to listen to."
Okay.
And that's what we have in this situation. That's what we have in this situation. It's what they choose to listen to. There are people that tell them better. It's just what they choose to listen to. So you can't say that they don't know. That's not true. They just don't give a fuck until they confront it with the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between misfeasance and malfeasance. There's a difference between the two. Misfeasance is when you do something and you're just incompetent. You just don't know. You're trying your best, but you don't have enough information to complete whatever the task is. So you don't really know how to do it. Malfeasance means you don't give a fuck. You're going to do what you want to do regardless of the consequences. Or you do it with such reckless disregard, you don't care about what happens to anybody else. You don't care about the consequences. You don't care about calling the police and the police going overboard and spreading this nigga out on the concrete. You don't care. It's reckless. The law has a term called gross negligence. I said I'm not going to go into any books, and I'm not going to go into any books. But what it means in essence is that you just don't give a fuck. And that's my position. They just don't give a fuck. They know, or they know that this may not be a good idea. They just don't give a fuck because they benefit from it.
No consequences, and they benefit from it.
Yeah, they benefit from it. And he said, well, all you got to do is say, hey, baby, first of all, let's take your prison experience. Let's go back to your prison experience.
Right.
When you told them niggas they couldn't sell dope in jail, what was their response to you?
Told me go fuck myself. Basically.
Now.
Until the white boy stepped in.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
What did they say to the white boys?
Shit, they put their hands behind their back and they acquiesced and they became good model citizens, nigga.
Shit. My point is, people will listen to people that have power.
Exactly.
People listen to people that they have some respect for.
Right.
Even if they can't stand them, they respect the power that they represent. Mm-hmm. They respect their authority.
Yeah, they were scared of them rednecks, nigga.
Yeah. Rednecks, they worst enemy, but they scared of them and they doing what the fuck they say.
Mm-hmm. And here I am, right? doing the reverse, trying to come in and help these niggas. And once again, we dealing with the ratchet horror mindset. Shit, they told me, fuck you, lame nigga. Well, all the while screaming that they want justice and they want equality and they want more black people working in the prison, you know what I mean? So they can get a fair shake. And as soon as they get it, they fuck it up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's
so that whole idea of you pulling her coattail, she has to respect you.
Mm-hmm.
And black women in the black community have way more respect for the white man than they got for you.
Mm.
So you can educate her all day long. Not like a ratchet hoe. She'll listen when she in trouble.
Right.
Because she need help. But by then, it's too late.
Mm.
So this stuff about educating them, people allow themselves to be educated only by people that they respect, only by people that have some influence over them. You don't have the average black man ain't got no influence over these black women.
Mm.
If it's an influence, it's a negative one that's going to draw the police. It's not something that they're going to listen to. You have to get their attention first.
Right.
A child in school, before you can teach him anything, you have to get his attention first. You have to sit his ass in that seat and get his attention first before you can give any type of instruction.
Mm.
And that child has to have some respect for your authority.
Shit. And when he was saying that shit, man, I mean, just on a basic level, when you're dealing with women, period, what Scarface was presenting, he was presenting a nice guy method of trying to get a hold of the mind of the woman, you know what I mean? And we both know, period, not just ratchet women, but women, period, we always know they're going to gravitate to the dude that's talking shit to them, talking shit about them, kicking them in their ass, smacking them around. Not the dude that bring roses and chocolates. They not listening
not
to that
all.
Shit. You know what I mean? So when he was presenting that shit, I'm like, is this really Scarface? Is this really the nigga that was hitting that hard shit? You know what I mean? Because I'm thinking even he has to know and understand that women respond more to a pimp backhand to, you know, a motherfucker serenading them.
This is the man that wrote the song called the high note off his last album.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She keep telling me her boyfriend is the kind she like, and the kind she went with him is because he's so nice.
Right.
Meanwhile, he's fucking on the balcony.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But this is the type of woman you gonna talk to and try to say, don't do that, baby. Don't call them people on us. And blah, blah, blah. No, she gonna call them people on you, nigga.
You just gotta talk nice to him, Tommy. You gotta talk nice to him. I'm like, nigga, are you serious? Is this Scarface? Okay, all right.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say, you know, then they come back and they say, well, that's just music. It's not, you know, it's music. You shouldn't live your life by it. But you were saying you live your lyrics, but okay, I won't get into that.
Right.
But I agree with you. His solution is not practical.
Right.
In a real world scenario, not when they benefit. Not when you set up a system where they benefit by not having a man in the home.
Oh.
Or they think they benefit. And then by the time they figure out they don't benefit, it's too late.
Mm. I mean, it benefits them, you know, in the early... Say what? Yeah, in the short term, because basically what's happening here, they get to have their cake and eat it too. You know, they get the financial support, they get, you know, the three hots in the cot, and they get the dick hop. You know what I mean? They get all the dicks they want, you know what I'm saying? While basically before these government entitlements, they had to basically settle down with the best choice of a man, you know, and they were stuck with one dick because, you know, that one man was going to provide for them and shit. But these days, it's not like that. They don't really need a man for provisions, but only at the later stages of their life when they want to settle down and they're not as cute anymore. You know what I mean?
When they're at the champagne level.
Right.
9 and 10 kids deep.
Right, exactly.
Or 5 and 6 kids deep. Mm-hmm. And that aid money is running out.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? Then that's when they want to do, you know, the little 911 home. Because let's be real. Capitalism functions by you being fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes capitalism work. Somebody is in some scenario and they fucked up. So you pay this man to solve a problem you have. And as above, so below. Mm-hmm. We benefit from them not when they tax checks come in.
Mm-hmm.
We fuck with them not when they tax checks come in. They see us when they tax checks run out.
No shit.
They fuck with us when that nigga done changed his number or cut his phone off.
Mm-hmm.
They fuck with us when nobody else is answering the phone.
Mm.
Welfare doesn't work because you balling out of control.
Yeah.
Welfare works because you fucked up. That's the economic system we live in, and the person that feeds you is the person you listen to.
Mm.
When you have all these children out of wedlock and there's no father in the home, they ain't gonna listen to you. So, I couldn't understand where he was going with that.
He was like, nah. I'm like, oh my God. Okay. Yeah,
I couldn't understand where he was going with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they talked about the riot and shit. He was talking about, I support personal civil unrest. And I'm like, okay, I understand what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
But do you understand the reality of how they play civil unrest? That plays right into their hands a lot of times. They can control your movement.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, a false flag operation is civil unrest. Isn't it?
Yeah. It's civil unrest by design.
By design. So be careful when you start, and I know he probably didn't mean that.
Right.
But you have to understand that that's the reality that's out there. They will design civil unrest for their purposes. They will put somebody in there, just like the Martin Luther King campaign, when we were trying to get the campaign for his birthday started. That was when Stevie Wonder came with the song and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They put people in there to disrupt that. We just planned a little march. And we didn't march anywhere but maybe for about maybe 10 miles.
Mm.
That was the distance of that little march. It was 10 miles. But they put an agent provocateur in a peaceful march, a 10-mile peaceful march, just because they didn't want to deal with the campaign of a King Holiday. That was civil unrest. And he said, well, with that scenario, Tony, that don't really apply because in this instance, they killed the boy. You think they wouldn't kill someone to provoke civil unrest?
Shit.
And if they kill someone, I understand you have to respond to that.
Right.
I agree with you. You should respond to that. You should. They should. There's a saying that even fake wars have casualties.
Mm-hmm. True.
But those casualties belong to somebody. It's a fake war, but those casualties, those are real people. Those fake casualties, in those fake wars, those casualties are real people. So there has to be a response, but it shouldn't be a response born from pure emotionalism.
Mm.
And thus, we're back at your point. The one thing they did right in Baltimore, they confronted the police. Because that was the source of the problem.
Right.
The source of the problem was the police.
Mm-mm.
At least they confronted the people who did the shit. Now, CVS didn't have nothing to do with that.
Right. Habib was innocent, too.
Habib didn't have shit to do with that. Habib was just running a check cashing place, charging you 6% or 7% interest to cash your check. He ain't had nothing to do with that.
Mm.
Now, was Habib getting over on you? Yeah, he was. But today, they fixing Habib's check cashing place. They know. So they're not totally stupid. They're out there trying to clean up.
Right.
They know what the deal is. What they quoted one little boy as saying, according to the press, I want to make my neighborhood pretty again.
Mm. Damage is already done, son. Man.
The naivety of children, isn't it beautiful?
Oh, man. Well, once again, just like we both say, it's like, you know, me and you sit back and we look at the patterns and the cycles, just like, you know, looking at the steady, repetitive hammering of the whole psyop of cops killing black folks, cops killing black folks. I'm like, this is by design. And then, of course, you know, the reactionary process of black folks, you know, doing the same shit over and over when confronted with a cop, or not just a cop, but a white cop killing someone black. You know, it's like, okay, when are you going to realize that this isn't working? You know what I mean? It just, but also, just like you said, at least this time they had the balls to hit back at the proper object. You know what I'm saying? But still, man, it's just like, God damn, man. I'm burnt out, dog. I'm burnt out trying to, you know, because to me and to you, it's elementary. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, let's clear it up, because, see, what they'll say, well, nigga, you just scared. You just, what are we supposed to do? See, they think that when you're saying this, you're saying that you ain't supposed to do nothing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They interpret it as though you're saying don't do anything because it's emotional, therefore you just lay back. See, mm-hmm. Then they'll come in and say, well, you're just saying that because you're scared.
Well, of course. Yeah.
And that's not what we're saying at all. I I'm not saying that. Right. I know I'm not saying that. I don't believe you're saying that. You don't just let people get killed with no response.
Right.
All we're saying is play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And play it the right way. That's all we're saying.
Mm.
That's all. In this instance, they did confront. They said it was like 15 police that were injured.
Right.
So they did address the source of their problem.
Mm-hmm.
You see. So, I mean, it's just understand they shouldn't be able to run this shit on you for another 50 years.
Mm-mm.
They shouldn't be able to run this same game on you for another 50 years.
Shit.
You know, how you fall for something for a century.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, when cats do listen to my show, it may come off, it may appear to be that, but of course, you know, my show is like a book. You can't just listen to one podcast and then get the whole gist of what I'm trying to say. You know what I mean? Just like the whole concept of getting your economic shit in order, getting your political shit in order, getting your educational shit in order, getting your family structure in order. That would negate damn near all of this other fuck shit that's going on with black folks getting smoked. You know what I mean? But of course,
I'm talking about the Tariq cheerleaders.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But
let me not say Tariq cheerleaders. Let me not put a name. The pro black niggas that are on the margins.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Those dudes. Let me not say that because I think Mr. Nasheed is a bit more balanced in his approach, even though sometimes he doesn't always show it, but he is.
Right, right.
So, you know. That was for the stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That is for the moronic element that may come across your pod.
Right.
That's who I'm talking to. Mm. And I use this instance of my personal experience to show you that not everything comes out of a book. As a matter of fact, mm-hmm. it's the reverse. People's life experiences usually make up books.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
This is shit that you go through and you find it in a book. And because you find it, it inspires you to keep reading. And then you begin to see the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Not because you find the pattern in the book. You're living the pattern, but the book explains the pattern. It corroborates your reality.
Right.
That's what it is. So I used that experience to show the parallels between Pritchard, Alabama and Baltimore, Maryland. Mm-hmm. Just because you got a black face, and I guess you figure that out now that they got a black president.
Mm-hmm.
A black face don't necessarily mean black power. The last podcast we talked about, and I'm not trying to rehash,
mm-hmm.
we talked about Charles Taylor. You remember him?
Yeah.
You'd never guess who Charles Taylor's business partner was.
No.
During the time he's committing all this genocide and decapitating the limbs of black people in the diamond trade, to finance the rebels, you'd never guess who his partner was.
Nah, who would that be?
Pat Robertson.
Pat Robertson?
Yes.
Like 700 Club?
Yes, sir.
What?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to look that up. I don't believe you.
Okay.
I'm going to have to cross-reference that one. What the fuck? What the hell?
Charles Taylor and Pat Robertson. The gist of it was this. He had granted some concessions to Pat Robertson with respect to access to certain avenues or channels of diamonds and gold mines. Matter of fact, I'll send you the link.
Oh, okay.
He had made some concessions to Robertson for some diamond or gold mines or access to those raw materials. In exchange, Robertson was to advocate for him politically here in the United States. He was supposed to lobby for him politically in the United States.
Okay.
In exchange for the access to those raw materials. But when and they got Charles Taylor is actually testifying to this.
Mm. Okay.
He's actually testifying to this in the world court. And so when Pat Robertson get busted, of course, he denied it. He was like, well, you know, I don't think it was ever, you know, it was never a quid pro quo. It was never a quid pro quo thing.
Hmm.
Yes, sir.
Mm. Wow. That's a mind blower.
Matter of fact, I'll put it on your page.
Mm, okay.
I'm going to make it easy for you to find. I'm going to sit it on your page.
Cool. Hell no.
Because the person who broke the story initially was a man by the name of Greg Palast. Greg Palast is an American journalist, but he got ran out of the country because, you know, they don't do investigative journalism. If you want good investigative journalism, you have to go to the BBC, the British Broadcasting.
Yeah, no doubt.
Americans don't do investigating journalism. No. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And he broke the story with Charles Taylor and Pat Robertson. He broke that 20 years ago. Almost 20 years ago, actually. Probably it was about 2001 was when that story came out. But when he finally got caught, they asked him this on the stand. They asked him these questions on the stand about Pat Robertson. And then when they went and asked Pat Robertson, he said, well, it was never a quid pro quo thing.
Mm.
Well, he started backing out of it. But nevertheless, he did have the concessions. And he was advocating for Charles Taylor to President Bush. He was lobbying on his behalf here in the United States.
All right. That's crazy.
So when I said that these pro-black niggas and these white Christian evangelists are the best of buddies, they are. Behind the scenes.
Shit.
Behind the scenes.
Hell no.
You know who put Idi Amin in power? You think he just came to power on his own? You know who put him in power? It was the British.
Right.
That raid in Entrebbe, when he had them Jewish hostages, he couldn't stop the Mossad. But they put that picture in Time or in Life magazine of those white folks down there on their knees hailing him. You know, so people look at that and say, wow, that's real black power. No, it's a setup. Because if they put you in power, they can take you out.
Well, check it out, Tony. We about to do it again, man. We about to go ahead and close it on out because it's up on an hour and stuff. So once again, you must tell me your closing thoughts about this whole Freddie Gray Baltimore, you know, books versus real life experience situation. Give us your final thoughts.
My final thoughts is this, man. All you need to do is it's good to read. And although we may be, you may call us elite, that's your title. We're not elitists. The Freddie Gray experience is a common experience, and it's been going on in America for the last at least half a century. And it's time to change. As before, it's time to change tactics. Y'all, the lives of the podcast listeners are no different than ours.
Right.
We went through the same thing that you're going through. We've seen the same things that you're going through. And the only thing we're doing is giving you another perspective. One that doesn't have you being exploited, you know, just financially prostituted, economically prostituted by the status quo.
Right.
Nobody's talking down to you. We're not attempting to be arrogant. And we don't live our whole lives. We love books and we read books, but these are things that we live separately this is real life experience. We're talking to you not as old niggas, but we're talking to you in a very real sense as your elders.
Shoot. That's it?
That's it.
That's it. All right. Once again, Fat Mac, Almighty Triple XL, coming at y'all live and direct. We closing it on out. I'm going to hit y'all up later. I got probably some listener emails I need to read out probably in the next show. So I haven't forgot about you cats. But right about now, I'd like to bid you all adieu, and I'd like to thank my partner, shoot, Magneto, Eric Magnus, Nigga Futures, Tony Dreamer.
You're going to have to explain that.
Yeah, we're going to explain it. Yeah, matter of fact, we're going to do that on the next show. because that's deep in itself. And we're going to open up some jewels that niggas ain't even ready for, didn't even know about that. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, once again, thank you, bro, for hollering at me. And we out.
You are the new student. Come closer.
You cannot see.
You think I cannot see?
Of all things, to live in darkness must be the worst.
Fear is the only darkness. Take your broom and strike me with it. Do as I tell you. Strike! Again. Here, catch. Never assume that because a man has no eyes, he cannot see. Close your eyes. What do you hear?
I hear the water. I hear the birds.
Do you hear your own heartbeat?
No.
Do you hear the grasshopper? Which is at your feet.
Old man, how is it that you hear these things?
Young man, how is it that you do not? MadCity.com.